Okay, so let's dive in. Annie Baker. She's, well, arguably one of the most essential, maybe paradoxical, American playwrights working today, wouldn't you say, over the last, what, 15 years?
Oh, absolutely essential. And paradoxical is exactly the right word. I mean, she's racked up these huge awards of Pulitzer, the MacArthur Genius Grant, Obies.
Right, the list goes on.
But here's the kicker, the paradox you mentioned. She got all this acclaim by deliberately trying to make theater that feels, well, she's quoted as saying, as untheatrical as possible.
Which it's just fascinating, isn't it? Making theater by almost not making theater in the conventional
It's a
sense.
remarkable contradiction, yeah. And it makes her such a compelling figure in contemporary art. She, slows everything down on stage, makes us really sit with silence, focuses on the totally mundane.
The everyday stuff.
Exactly. But somehow, through that really intense observation, she uncovers something profound. You could argue she's really shifted what audiences even consider drama. She's been at the forefront of that change.
So that's our mission for this deep dive. And we want to trace that journey, look at her background, really get into dissecting that signature anti-theatrical style that shook things up, and also touch on her more recent move, which is pretty significant, into directing feature films. We want to give you, the listener, the full picture of an artist who didn't just challenge expectations, but, totally succeeded because of it.
And we should probably dig into her methods, her inspirations, but maybe before we get into the real high art stagecraft, we should start with this little detail from her early
Oh,
days.
yes, this is brilliant.
It's kind of unexpected, but it really sets the stage, so to speak, for understanding her whole commitment to authenticity later on, a unique perspective on reality versus, well, manufactured reality.
Okay, lay it on us. This is one of my favorite bits from the sources. Before she was the queen of hypernaturalism off-Broadway, what was she doing?
Well, according to our sources, one of her early jobs was working as a guest
A
wrangler.
guest wrangler.
Yeah, helping manage the contestants on, wait for it, the reality TV show The Bachelor?
No way, The Bachelor. That's almost performance art in itself, the contrast.
Yeah.
Talk about a clash of worlds.
Couldn't script it better, could you? Right, so let's unpack her background a bit because knowing where she came from, her academic path, it helps make sense of why she maybe felt the need to break the rules so thoroughly later.
Okay.
She was born in Cambridge, Massachusetts, April 81, but actually grew up mostly in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Amherst, okay, so like classic New England intellectual hub vibe.
Exactly. And her
Okay.
family fits right into that. Her father, Con Nugent, he was an administrator for the Five Colleges Consortium there, pretty prestigious.
Right.
And her mother, Linda Baker, was a psychology doctoral student. So you've got academia, analysis, observation baked right in.
Yeah, you can see how an environment like that might prize, careful observation, language, how people pick.
Definitely. And there's clearly a strong literary thing going on, too. We should note her background is mixed Irish Catholic, father, Jewish mother, and her brother, Benjamin Baker Nugent, he's an author, too.
Ah, okay. So writing, scrutinizing human behavior, it was kind of the family business in a way.
Seems like it. But it wasn't just osmosis. Her formal training was rigorous, very focused on dramatic writing structure, which is interesting given how she later dismantled it.
Where did she study?
She got her BFA from the Department of Dramatic Writing at NYU's Tisch School of the Arts, big name program.
Okay, solid foundation.
And she didn't stop there. She followed that up with postgraduate work, which feels really key. She got her MFA in playwriting from Brooklyn College, finished up in 2009.
2009. Okay.
That academic grounding is crucial, I think. It wasn't just raw talent. She really studied dramatic form, which means when she started subtracting things later, like conventional plots, she knew exactly what rules she was breaking and why. It was intentional.
Right. She learned the structure to deconstruct it. And that MFA date, 2009, that lines up pretty closely with when her first plays started getting serious attention there.
Exactly. Things were starting to happen for her right around
But let's just circle back for a second to that unexpected early job.
then.
The bachelor guest wrangler thing, the contrast with the kind of art she's famous for, it's just massive. We have to sit with that for a moment.
We really do. Because think about it. On one hand, you've got reality TV.
Right. High drama, right? Highly produced, edited for maximum conflict, fast cuts.
Explicit narratives, producer-driven storylines. Everything is ramped up, even if the stakes are totally manufactured.
Pure artifice, basically.
And then on the other hand, you have Annie Baker's plays, which are praised for being the polar opposite. Low stakes, long silences, real-time action, deliberately avoiding anything that feels like manipulation or fake drama.
So connecting those dots, being a guest wrangler, the person literally managing the contestants in that artificial environment that must have given her this like incredibly clear, maybe even cynical view of the gap between performance, the face people put on under pressure, and just messy, unvarnished reality.
You have to think so. So when she later writes a play like The Flick, where the main action is two people silently sweeping up popcorn.
Yeah, of minutes on end.
Right. She's making a conscious artistic choice against the loud, engineered narratives of the world she saw on The Bachelor. It's a deliberate rejection.
So her naturalism isn't just like a style choice. It's almost a philosophical commitment to authenticity, maybe born from seeing the extreme opposite up close.
I think that's a great way to put it. She saw performance and she chose quiet truth, unflinching, slow truth.
Okay, so let's move into that really defining early period. This is where her unique style gets established and where critics started using that term anti-theatrical. We're talking about her Shirley VT universe.
Right, the fictional small town in Vermont that anchors her first few major plays. This is crucial for understanding how her voice developed.
Which plays are we talking about specifically in the Shirley series?
The core ones are Body Awareness, that was 2008, her off-Broadway debut, then Circle Mirror Transformation in 2009, and The Aliens in 2010. These three really laid out her territory. Ordinary people, small town, often isolated lives.
And what's really striking is how quickly the theater world, especially regionally, seemed to recognize that these plays were connected, that this was a specific project.
Oh, totally. There was this amazing moment, October, November 2010, three Boston theater companies all decided to produce these three Shirley plays at the same time.
Wow. Which companies?
It was the Huntington Theater Company, Speakeasy Stage, and Company One, a major collaboration. It showed this immediate belief in what she was doing, the shared sense that her aesthetic was something important right from the start.
So let's nail down that aesthetic. What is it? Why did people immediately jump on this anti-theatrical idea back in 2008? What does it actually feel like for the audience?
Well, the critics were surprisingly consistent early on. Time Out New York, back in 2008, they said she creates normal individuals coping with everyday issues in their small town lives. And crucially, they noted her work aims for sincerity instead of just being clever.
Sincerity over cleverness.
Yeah.
That feels key. Not witty banter, not shocking twists, just truthfulness.
Exactly. Behavioral truth. And that sincerity leads directly to why people started calling it anti-theatrical. The New Yorker really hit it on the head. They said she pioneered a style where life on stage is meant to be so vivid, natural, and emotionally precise that it bleeds into the audience's visceral experience of time and space.
Wow. So it's theater trying not to feel like theater. It wants to merge with your own sense of time.
Precisely. It refuses to perform its theatricality. It's about radical observation, like you said.
Can you give us a concrete example? Like, what's a classic Baker moment that illustrates this?
Okay, a perfect example, again, from The Flick. There's a stage direction, I believe, that basically says a character sweeps the floor for 3 minutes, silently, just sweeping popcorn.
3 whole minutes of sweeping?
Yep. In real time. No music, no cutting away. A conventional play would speed through that, right? Or use it for exposition. Baker makes you sit through the sweeping. That insistence on the mundane task, on not speeding up time, that's the core of it. It challenges you, but it also makes the moment incredibly real.
Which means the audience has to completely recalibrate their expectations. The Daily Beast pointed this out. They said her skill is making the audience work hard to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
It's demanding, but enriching.
Mm-hmm.
And they flat out said her stuff isn't for people who want easy A leads to B plots and spoon-fed meanings.
Right. It shifts your focus. You stop asking what happens next and start asking what's happening right now. Suddenly an awkward silence, a nervous glance, a cough that becomes the drama. She holds up a mirror, but holds it very still, making us look at the parts of life we usually edit out.
And this challenging style didn't, like, bomb. It got rewarded instantly.
Mm-hmm.
Circle Mirror Transformation and The Aliens. They actually shared the Obie Award for Best New American Play in 2010.
Shared it, which is rare. And The Aliens was also a finalist for the Susan Smith Blackburn Prize that same year. So major recognition very early on.
Okay, so she's defined by this hyper-contemporary small-town American naturalism, which makes her next move interesting. Adapting a 19th century Russian classic.
Seems like a jump, right? But actually, it makes perfect sense when you think about who she adapted. In 2012, she did Anton Chekhov's Uncle Vanya for Soho Rep.
Ah, Chekhov. Okay, that connection clicks. He's the master of characters who talk about doing things but never quite manage it, right? the famous dramatic inertia.
Exactly. Chekhov is all about that deep inner life simmering beneath the surface. People yearning for Moscow, yearning for change, but stuck, trapped in ennui and stasis. Baker is totally his modern heir. She just translates that same profound sadness and longing into contemporary American speech patterns. She gets that sometimes the hardest thing is just enduring the lack of meaning.
And her Vanya adaptation, it was directed by Sam Gold, right? We're going to talk more about him.
Yes, a crucial collaborator. We'll definitely circle back to Gold. Their version was really well received. The New York Times called it funky fresh, which suggests her ear for natural dialogue really worked, even on a classic text.
And the cast for that was pretty stellar too, wasn't it?
Oh, incredible cast. Reed Birney played Vanya. Michael Shannon played Astrov. Merritt Weaver as Sonia. Just top-tier actors drawn to that style.
Michael Shannon doing Quiet Desperation.
Yeah, I can picture that.
It worked beautifully. And Shannon and Weaver both won the Joe A. Calloway Award for their performances in 2012. It really proved Baker's approach wasn't just for her original material. She could bring that same observational intensity to interpreting the classics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if the Shirley plays established her style, the moment it truly broke through, got that major national validation, that was definitely the flick. This is the play that cemented her as a major, major voice. Premiered at Playwrights Horizons March 2013.
The flick. Right. Set in that rundown movie theater. Just three employees, right? A projectionist, two cleaners.
Yeah. Yep.
And they basically just talk about movies, about their lives, about nothing much, all while cleaning up popcorn and dealing with this old 35 millimeter projector. And famously, it has those really long silences, the real-time action, sweeping, waiting.
All the Baker hallmarks?
Exactly. But the level of acclaim it got, especially considering how unconventional it is, it was kind of staggering. She won the OBE for playwriting in 2013. Okay, that makes sense. The OBE is recognized downtown experimental work.
But then
the next year, 2014, she wins the Pulitzer Prize for drama.
The Pulitzer? For the flick?
Yeah.
That's huge. That's the establishment saying this quiet, anti-theatrical style is not just valid, it's among the best in American drama.
Monumental validation. And it kept going. It won the Critics Circle Theater Award in London for Best New Play in 2016, yeah. So it crossed the Atlantic, too. It really proved this subtle, observational thing could win the biggest prizes, reach broad audiences. It changed the landscape.
Now, you mentioned Sam Gold earlier with Uncle Vanya. We really need to underscore that partnership here, don't we?
Yeah.
Because the flick was also directed by him.
Absolutely. We have to pause and give major credit to Sam Gold. Their collaboration, starting back with Circle Mirror Transformation in 2009, running through Vanya the flick and her next play, John. It's incredibly important.
Because for Baker's writing to land, the direction has to be perfectly in sync, right? You need someone who understands how to stage stillness, how to manage that slow burn tempo without losing the audience.
Totally. The director has to trust the silence, trust the actors, trust the audience. Gold clearly speaks Baker's language. He knows how to make that quietness resonate.
And that partnership continued with her next big play, John, in 2015. That premiered at the Signature Theater, right?
Correct. And that premiere was significant in itself. It was the first play under the Signature Theater's Residency 5 program.
What's that involved?
It's a huge deal. It guarantees a playwright 3 world premiere productions over 5 years. So Signature wasn't just saying the flick was great. They were saying, we're investing long-term in Annie Baker's entire way of working. John was the first of those 3, and the Antipodes followed in 2017.
Okay, so John, this one moved away from Shirley, Vermont, didn't it?
Yeah, new setting, a big, maybe slightly unsettling, bed and breakfast in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And it featured amazing actors like Lois Smith and Georgia Engel.
Georgia Engel, wow. But the themes, still very Baker.
Oh, absolutely. This is where you see her observational powers really crystallize into exploring deep, universal themes. The critics zeroed in on it. The New York Times called it a haunting and haunted meditation on topics she has made so singularly her own.
Which are?
The omnipresence of loneliness in human life and the troubled search for love and lasting connection.
Omnipresence of loneliness. That hits hard. And it feels like maybe that's why her work connects so deeply, even with the slow pace. She lets you witness that quiet isolation, those fumbling attempts to connect, things we all feel but rarely see portrayed so honestly.
I think that's exactly right. And that universality led to more major acclaim for John. It landed on Time Magazine's Top 10 Plays and Musicals list for 2015. The Hollywood Reporter also ranked it as one of the best New York shows that year.
Okay, strong showing. But then there's this other ranking. This one's kind of mind-blowing.
You mean the Time Out ranking?
Yeah. The play goes to the West End, opens at the National Theatre in London in 2018, and then Anti-Propst at Time Out apparently ranked John as the 40th best play ever written.
40? Not top 40 of the year or the decade, ever.
That's astonishing. For a play written just a few years earlier, known for its quiet realism. Putting it up there with, like, the historical giants.
It's monumental praise. What it suggests is that critics saw John as addressing something so fundamental about the human condition, using such a unique and effective method, that it transcended its contemporary moment. It's a statement that this theater of stillness, of quiet observation, has just as much claim to greatness as traditional drama.
And again, the performances were recognized.
Yeah.
Georgia Engel won an Obie for her role in John, right?
She did, a 2016 Obie for performance, and the whole production got a special citation for collaboration, recognizing Baker, Gold, and the design team together, because creating that specific, immersive, slightly unsettling atmosphere, that's crucial to her work. It's a total package. So moving into more recent years, the 2020s, Annie Baker hasn't exactly been resting on her laurels. She's continued with stage work, but also made this really significant leap into a whole new medium.
Right. Still writing for the stage, though. What's the latest there?
Her most recent play we have info on is Infinite Life. That opened off-Broadway, Atlantic Theater Company, September 2023. And the critics seem to really embrace it. Descriptions like weird and great new play. So still pushing boundaries, still surprising people with her approach to structure.
Weird and great.
Yeah.
Sounds about right for her. But the big news really was the film, wasn't it? Janet Planet.
Huge news. 2023. Her feature film directing debut. It's a coming-of-age story produced by A24, which is already a signifier of a certain kind of indie sensibility.
A24, yeah.
Yeah.
And it premiered at Telluride.
Yep, the 50th Telluride Film Festival. So, a prestigious launch. This is a major shift, obviously, for someone so deeply identified with live theater.
It really is. Moving from that shared space, mm-hmm. shared time of the theater where the audience is kind of captive, physically present for the silences,
mm-hmm.
to cinema, which is mediated, framed, edited. And she wrote it too, right? Not just directed.
Wrote and directed. Right. Starring Julia Nicholson, Zoe Ziegler, Sofia Canedo.
Great cast. So the big question everyone had was, can that signature Annie Baker style, the slowness, the quiet, the anti-theatrical vibe,
yeah.
actually translate to film, where audiences expect, you know, faster cuts, more explicit emotional cues?
That was the question. And the industry certainly recognized the effort and the quality. She got two Independent Spirit Award nominations right off the bat, Best First Feature and Best First Screenplay. That's significant recognition for a debut.
Okay, so awards nominations. What about the critics? How did they react to Janet Planet?
Well, this is where it gets really interesting, because the reception was kind of split, but split in a way that perfectly reflects the nature of her work.
Oh.
On the one hand, you had reviews like David Rooney's in The Hollywood Reporter, totally glowing, called it an exquisite debut, an oddball marvel of comparable beauty. That suggests, yes, the precision, the quiet depth, the long takes, it worked beautifully for him.
Okay, strong positive.
But then you had reviews like Thomas Laffley's for The Wrap, more mixed, called it textured yet wearisome, and specifically said it keeps the viewer at arm's length.
Wearisome? Ouch.
Yeah.
But also kind of understandable, maybe?
Exactly. That criticism, wearisome, points directly back to what critics have always said about her plays. They're demanding. They make you work hard. Mm. If you go into her film expecting a typical movie pace, her commitment to real-time observation, her refusal to spell things out, it could feel wearisome or distant on screen.
It's like the audience contract is different. In a theater, you've committed, you sit in the dark, you wait through the silence. Watching a film, especially at home, the temptation to speed up, to look away, is much higher. And she's refusing to cater to that.
She's absolutely refusing. She's forcing the film viewer to meet her halfway, just like she does with the theater audience, but in a medium that's generally much less patient. It really shows how deeply committed she is to her artistic vision, regardless of the format.
That's the challenge she faces now, isn't it? How to keep that slow, honest integrity in film without alienating an audience conditioned for speed.
It'll be fascinating to see how she navigates that.
And just a quick side note before we move on, she actually acted a little bit too, right? Way back.
Oh yeah, a small thing. Back in 2014, she played a character named Elise in Noah Baumbach's film, While We're Young.
Interesting. Another little foray into being in the performance world.
You know, looking back at all the awards and fellowships she's received, it really drives home how much the establishment, the big arts institutions, have actively supported her very specific non-traditional approach. It's not just praise. It's tangible support.
Right. And the biggest one has to be the MacArthur Fellowship, the Genius Grant in 2017.
Absolutely. That's $625,000 over 5 years, no strings attached. That kind of funding is crucial. It literally buys an artist the freedom to take risks, to pursue work that isn't necessarily commercial, to stick to their guns. It's innovation funding for the arts.
And they came after other major financial awards, too, like the Guggenheim Fellowship in 2014.
Mm-hmm. And the Steinberg Playwright Award in 2013, which included a $50,000 prize. It's a clear pattern. The system recognizing the value in her anti-theatrical method and wanting her to keep doing it.
It wasn't just money either, right? Lots of residencies, development labs.
Oh, yes. Crucial for honing her craft. She was at the Sundance Institute Theater Lab twice, 2008 and 2014. And that second time, she actually directed her own play there, The Last of the Little Hours.
What was that one about?
It follows the daily routines of Benedictine monks. Again, you see that focus on quiet discipline, the observation of the mundane, the ritualistic.
Makes sense. Monks and silent movie theater workers. Maybe not so different in her eyes.
Could be. She also had multiple McDowell Colony fellowships, and she was a fellow at the New York Public Library's Cullman Center. So recognition across the board, from theater development to broader humanities institutions, it shows her work is seen as having real intellectual weight.
And beyond creating her own work, she's clearly very invested in teaching in shaping the next wave of writers.
Hugely invested. Her teaching record is expensive. She teaches playwriting at NYU, Barnard College, the MFA programs at Stony Brook, Southampton, and Hunter College.
Wow, quite a list.
And she's currently an associate professor of practice at the University of Texas at Austin in their MFA playwriting directing program. So she's not just influential through her play, she's actively involved in training writers, passing on that rigorous approach to making theater that feels incredibly real, helping to codify hypernaturalism, maybe.
Finally, we should probably touch on her public engagement as well. Based on the sources, it seems like that commitment she has artistically to witnessing things honestly, exploring connection, it sometimes extends into public advocacy.
It does appear that way. And we'll just report these instances factually as part of the overall portrait without taking any stance ourselves.
Right. Just the facts from the sources.
So in July 2017, she was one of about 60 artists who signed an open letter. It was organized by a group called Adala NY, and it asked Lincoln Center to cancel performances of a play that was sponsored by the Israeli government.
Okay, and more recently?
More recently, in 2023, she was among a group of Jewish American writers who signed another open letter, this one addressed to President Biden, asking for a ceasefire.
Got it. So instances where she's joined with others to voice concerns on larger political or human rights issues, it does seem consistent in a way with a playwright whose work is so focused on observing human situations, whether micro-level loneliness or macro-level conflict.
So if we try to wrap this up, synthesize her career so far, Annie Baker's really unique contribution, it seems, isn't just that she wrote brilliant plays, it's that she fundamentally changed the conversation about what theater is or can be. She insisted on using raw, almost overheard dialogue, this intense naturalism.
Yeah, that demands patience from the audience.
It does. But it rewards that patience with this incredibly deep resonance. By slowing down time, by focusing on what critics call that omnipresence of loneliness, she just holds up this incredibly clear mirror to our own inner lives, our own quiet moments, our own clumsy attempts at connection.
She proves that massive drama doesn't always need shouting or spectacle. It can exist in the pauses, in the silences between the words. It's about authentic human feeling.
Exactly. Great theater as sincere human connection, not just entertainment.
Which leads us to a final thought, maybe a question for you, the listener, to chew on. Given that she has had this critical success, even if it was mixed, translating that very distinctive anti-theatrical stage voice into her film debut, Janet Planet, how is this dual identity going to play out? She's a Pulitzer-winning playwright who makes audiences sit through minutes of silence, and she's now an acclaimed film director working in a medium that usually hates silence and loves speed. How will she keep challenging the boundaries of engaging drama across both stage and screen?
That's the big question, isn't it? Which medium is ultimately the better fit for her particular brand of slow, quiet, observational genius? Or can she make both work on her own terms?
It's something to definitely keep an eye on. It'll be fascinating to see what she does next.